I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good.
You are listening to the Action Figure Blues podcast, episode number 267, for the week of Wednesday, the 5th of April. I'm Eddie, and with me tonight are Adam, Ben, and Peter. This episode is brought to you by Davey Boys Toys and ActionFigureBlues.com. Tonight, our toys of the week are the Effect Explosions by Bandai, the SH Figure Arts Ranma Half, Ranma Satomoi Boy Type, and a secret listener segment. Welcome, Yandevoo, welcome. Hello, guys. It's Eddie here. Welcome to another episode of Action Figure Blues. It should be a good one today. We have your classic Ben. We have Adam returning. And we have a listener, Peter, who has edited up his own figure segment, which starts off with a bit of trivia for you guessing to what he's going to be talking about. So I didn't want to spoil it in the intro, but he has definitely set a wonderful bar for people recording some action figure talk and sending it in. So it looks like we have a great episode here for your listening pleasure for today. So without further ado, let's get into it.
He'll not be going.
Oh, and I suppose a great muggle like yourself's going to stop him, are you?
Well, welcome back. This is Adam, and I'm bringing you a review of the SH Figure Arts Ranma 1/2 Ranma Saotome Boy Type figure. And that is quite the mouthful. As I've discussed before on the show, Ranma 1/2 is a property based on... Well, the original property is manga by Rumiko Takahashi. There is an anime that followed on from it. It follows the adventures of Ranma and his father and friends, who have, for the most part, been involved in Ranma falling in a cursed spring of water, whereby he turns into a girl when splashed with cold water and reverts to a boy when splashed with warm water. So in this case, we have Ranma, the boy type. So he has not fallen in cold water since last we saw him, which is an interesting detail about one of his accessories, which we'll cover quite quickly. The figure was released in 2016. I acquired mine in 2016. It is indeed an action figure. It goes for about $45 US, not including shipping. The packaging is more or less the standard that we've come to know and love from a figure arts, in that there's the window box where you can see the figure. There's some art on the outside, so you get to see some ways to pose the figure. There's no control art or anything like that shown. There is on the back some superimposing of the figure doing things over top of manga pages, so it's kind of interesting that they've used the manga as reference, considering that in the anime the characters have slightly different looks, such as girl-type Ranma having red hair, when in the manga she just has indiscriminate coloured hair, which I think is largely black, because manga is a two-tone medium for the most part. Inside of the box, there is the usual multi-tray system. Because this is not an overly detailed figure, there's really only the tray and the tray cover. The hands are not on a totem pole, additional hands are not on a totem pole. There is not an additional slide out for hands or faces, as has been done with some of the figures. There's the usual insert of a backing colour card and the detailed instructions or what have you for posing the figure and swapping out faces and things like that. So, you know, it's collectible friendly packaging. All you're really doing is nicking a piece of tape to get in, and then you can take everything out, do what you need, and put the rest back, which is really good. The sculpting is pretty good. So this is Ramna wearing his, I guess it's a Chinese shirt, so red shirt, blue pants, his karate slippers. He's got his ponytail going, which is basically the entire way through the series, apart from a couple notable situations where it's not. In terms of the shirt, it's hard cast plastic for the most part, apart from where the, I guess the, what do you call that, the bottom of the shirt tail and the shirt front are hanging over his pants, which is a bit kind of softer plastic, so it's a little bit flexible and malleable. In terms of the rest of it, you know, the buttons are not just painted on, they're raised. The sleeves, ends of the sleeves, the cuffs are actually folded over well. The collar is there and it's a separate piece, so that's good, and is painted separately. So the sculpt is quite good, and as with most of the figure arts, the knees blend in pretty well with a pants leg type approach. The paint is not overly detailed. We've talked about this in the past. So as figure arts have gone along, they've used less and less dry brushing and washing. You now pretty much get flat plastic colour for the most part. The plastic is coloured the right colours as a base colour, but there's no highlights really. In this case, the sleeves, I think, are actually painted white rather than cast separately white. The belt sash around his shirt is painted on. The buttons, while actually raised, they're painted. The collar, I think the inside of the collar is painted white and the eyes are painted on. I assume by doing all of this in terms of reducing washing and reducing dry brushing and focusing on simply the things that have to be done, figure outs are actually giving themselves an easier job and making it therefore less likely that they have quality control stuff ups, which, you know, so we lose a bit of detail, but on the flip side, we don't get horrific atrocities and abominations and crimes against nature. So I think I'm willing to take that. So yeah, the paints are fine. The bucket is painted in a lovely silver kind of colour. The water inside that is also painted as well, so it looks like a proper bucket, which is one of his accessories. He also comes with a brown backpack, which is not painted at all, but is cast in the colour of the backpack. The articulation. So, I mean, I go on about figure arts. I've kind of got to the point where I'm a little bit numb to the level of articulation. The key features here, you know, you've got a toe bend, so you can actually pose them on with a bent toe, which is good. The pigtail is articulated, so it bends a little bit or rotates a bit. The shoulder joint is, I think, the two-segmented phase, so there's a little bit of rotation inside the actual chest area, and then there's the actual arm rotating around on that, so that gives you a lot of mobility there. There's an ab crunch type situation, so you can get a bit of extra posing in the torso, which is good. As far as that shirt comes into play, when you try and do some of the things that in Ranma are kind of iconic in a way, in terms of just physical humour, where you have people with legs sticking up when someone gets surprised or gets kicked, and it's a single comic joke, it's a straight leg extended up quite high, and having the shirt sleeve and shirt tail, or shirt front and shirt tail, come down over the hip area actually restricts some of that movement. So it's fine. You can do some of those poses, but you end up with the leg, instead of going straight up in front of the figure, it comes out a bit to the side. If you pose the figure correctly and place it correctly in your display or in your photos, you can reduce that through, you know, your visual effects trickery bag. But when you actually look at it, it's not quite right, which is a little bit disappointing. But, I mean, it's one of those things of what are you willing to trade in terms of the accuracy in terms of the shirt versus in terms of being able to pose some things. So I think they've got the trade-off mostly right there. The other thing that goes into, again, some of the angles that get done for essentially physical comedy in the manga and the anime is things like arms being bent at, you know, painful angles, and similarly, you know, fingers, etc. So the arms, it's not such a big deal, but things like fingers not being articulated in this particular figure art line, it actually does, on reflection, kind of cramp your style and harsh your buzz a little bit. It's good that we have plenty of swap out hands. We have something like 8 additional sets of hands here, but just the ability to get quite exactly what you're after is limited. So that's a slight detraction, but I wouldn't go around crying about it too much. Because, you know, there's a lot of jumping and kicking and fly kicks and what have you in a martial arts-based storyline. There's also a display stand. These are not a full, essentially, Tamashii Act 4 stand that we've been able to purchase for quite some time. It's the reduced stand that we've had for most of the other figures in terms of Sailor Moon and Ranma. It's just a square or rectangular base. It's got Ranma's name printed on it, so it's specifically for this figure and easy to work out. And then just a simple one stand level in terms of the one hinged arm plus some bits to make sure you can hold a figure. So again, I think that's a really good thing to have on figures that are involved in martial arts. It's one of the things I've been continually griping about with the Dragon Ball Z figures, is you have these characters that are airborne as often as not, and we don't have a way to make sure that they can hold those poses. The other accessories I've already touched on. There is a bucket of cold water. I find it interesting that boy-type Ranma has the cold water and girl-type Ranma has the kettle of water. I guess it makes sure that you're able to essentially show they can change between the two, but it's also one of those things where you would expect to see boy-type Ranma to some extent as a result of having a kettle and girl-type Ranma as a result of having a bucket. That's fine. There are 3 additional portraits. So there's a kind of shouting Ranma, there's the embarrassed Ranma, there's kind of content smiling Ranma with eyes off to the side, and I think there's just a kind of plain faced Ranma as well. I was a little bit disappointed that there isn't a sleeping face Ranma or a scared out of my wits about cats Ranma. I think those are another 2 kind of iconic faces. So, you know, I think there was a range of options we could have had there to deal with that. The other accessory is the backpack, which is really, you know, just something that is useful in the day-to-day run to and from school for Ranma. I don't think we would have lacked a lot by not having it if we'd had those faces instead. You know, we'd have had some more options. The backpack is nice to have, and I'm not going to complain about it. In terms of drawbacks about this figure, really, there's nothing I think we can really gripe on about too hard. I didn't have any quality control issues. I think we've captured the essence of the character really well. It fits in well with the shampoo and the girl type Ranma. It looks like it fits in well with the Akane that's, I think, released already, and the Ryoga that's, I think, announced. I don't think it's been released. So I think this is progressing quite well on the way to a detailed line. I think this figure will go well with the Effect Wind items for things like doing their Hiryu Shoten Ha for special manoeuvres. So I think this is going to end up being a really good figure. And for those that are interested in Ranma, I think this is a good addition to the line. So I would give this a dolly rating of, I think, 8.5. Thanks for your time. And up next, we will have another Toy of the Week.
Brilliant.
Well, greetings, valued AFB listeners. It's Ben, aka Fish Milkshake, here, coming at you with another Action Figure Blues Toy of the Week review. And for this episode, I'm taking a look at something just a little bit different, and it is the Effect Explosion. Yes, sounds like a bad subtitle, doesn't it? Well, it's another one of the releases in the Bandai range, or Bandai range of effects that they've been doing in the last couple of years. I did a review of their kind of water, fire, the blue version effect some time ago, And that is their, as I said, effect explosion. So what we have is an action figure accessory, three accessories that, well, if you're clever, you can put them together and replicate explosions. These were actually a 2015 release. I actually picked them up the other day, both the red version, and that's what it's called on the box, Red Ver, and the grey version. So that's six in total, two separate boxes. They'll set you back about 2,700 yen. That's about $25, but have a bit of a hunt around on eBay and places like that, and you might pick up a bit of a deal. Now, these are around maybe 4 inches or 10 centimeters in height. As I said, each box has three, and just looking at them, you get the impression that they are actually... One is slightly bigger than the next and slightly bigger than the next. So I guess the odd shape is a bit, it's hard to tell really, but they are all roughly the same size, but it's clear that one is actually bigger than the others. Now, packaging. Well, what a bummer this one is. This is one of the most boring packages I've seen in quite some time. I'm trying to remember how the fire effects were packaged, if they were similar to this, and I don't remember them being as bad, but maybe I was just a bit kinder then. This is really quite dull. It's a window box that is basically white with, well, a little bit of red sort of highlights. The explosions, which are actually done in type of a negative illustration, are red. And, of course, the effect explosion label across the top of the box is in red and white as well. So the rest of the box has some red text on it, but it really is quite dull. Nothing but writing on the sides, the top and the bottom with the effect explosion. And the front of the box, which has a very, very large window, is sort of half covered up with the explosion that I mentioned before, and that really sort of, it's the Bandai logo man, or whatever you want to call him, that sort of nondescript mannequin-looking dude that they use to advertise in their various products. And he's standing proud, arm raised, in amongst all the explosions. So then with the size of the window reduced, it actually makes it quite hard to look into the packaging. But worst of all, the way the three explosions are packaged inside, they come in one of those classic trays with the pieces set into them, and then an over-the-top cover that sort of slips down over holding them in place. So I guess you could say that's a sort of two-stage tray. But the nature of the way they've packaged the explosions means that the tray, the bottom tray that the explosions sit in, is very, very deep. It's probably about, close to 6 inches, maybe 15 centimeters deep. And I was trying to work out why, in terms of the engineering of the packaging, that it is deep. It has to be that deep. And I think just the way they've actually placed them, a couple of the tendrils or sort of shrapnel bits that are coming off the explosions are sticking up, and that seems to have added depth to the packaging. So even if you're actually picking these up off the shelf and having a bit of a look in a store, the explosion sits so far back in the packaging through the window box that they're actually kind of hard to see. And even though there's a small window on the back, there's definitely nothing on the side. So it's kind of hard to get a real sense of looking at them, you know, in the flesh, as it were. On the back is where you get the best bang for your buck. There's some really good shots that have been done in the Bandai studio that shows how you can actually go about using these. Quite clever in the way that they've done them. There's figures being blown up. There's other figures who look like they're causing the explosion, that sort of thing. So, you know, it's quite clever and gives you a bit of a feel for what you can do with them. However, Bandai, who have been shipping to the West for quite a few years, still insist on having a package that is almost entirely in Japanese. And my Japanese is probably one level lower than absolutely nothing. So I can get almost nothing from this packaging except the title, which is Effect Explosion. So pretty poor. I mean, I know a lot of toys are, you know, made in China for, you know, English-speaking countries and shipped over, you know, to the East. But I would have thought that Bandai would start actually putting some English equivalents on here. So, for example, we've got some poses on the back of the box, really nifty in the way that they've done. And if I can kind of read between the lines, I get the impression that it says something along the lines of, this effect was reached by using a Bandai, you know, additional figure stand to hold one of the explosions, which is not included. So you won't be able to actually get some of these, I guess, diorama setups or poses or whatever with these explosions without an additional Bandai stand, which is not included. So a bit of a bummer, but not really obvious until you get them out. So anyway, you get out that horrible tray, you lift off that horrible top tray that holds them in place, and of course you fight with them, and then you finally get these things out. And yeah, then they're pretty cool. Not bad to sort of look at. In terms of the sculpt, well, you're looking at what is, I guess, as close as possible a representation of an explosion. So the main body of these three gives you that feel of that concussive force. So you've got a centre mass that is kind of bubbly in the way it's done, with, you know, the concussive force pushing both flames and sort of the ash and stuff like that out. What you also get is these really cool sort of cone pieces sticking out as if it's propelling shrapnel out from inside the main, you know, the central part of the explosion. And they're all really nicely sculpted. There's plenty of detail going on here, lots of little sort of uneven pieces. Some of the bubbly bits of the concussive force are slightly rounded, which gives you that sort of, you know, aesthetic feel. But, you know, in terms of sculpt, I think they've done a pretty good job. When you line up the three of them next to each other, there's enough of a difference between the three of them that it doesn't feel like you're just buying the same thing three times. So you do get, you know, I guess a good feel of three completely different pieces. So not a bad idea. Really not much else to describe. They are hollow, and interestingly, I thought these pieces would be three-dimensional, so I assumed that there would be a flat base for sitting them on your diorama, but then you could actually rotate them and position them differently. That's actually not the case. The plastic of the main body is probably about as thick as a pencil, and when you turn it around, the entire back of the explosion is open. So it's hollow, and you can stick your fingers in there. It's as if it's kind of being jaggedly cut in half. This is interesting. I'm not sure why they've chosen to do that. I don't know whether it just cuts down on the amount of plastic that's involved in in terms of the paint, which I'll touch on shortly. But it is quite interesting. I think it does limit the usability a little bit. And I was completely surprised because it wasn't obvious from within the packaging. So, not too bad. Paint. Interesting. All right. What have they done with paint? Well, as I mentioned, the plastic is about as thick as a pencil. So what they've done on the inside, that hollow piece on the back, they've actually painted it with a bright yellow. So the plastic is a translucent orange. And because they've painted the back inside part with this yellow color, it actually causes a change in appearance between the extended shrapnel pieces and then the body itself. So the body part you kind of see through the orange plastic until you get to that yellow paint inside, whereas the extended sort of shrapnel cone pieces are just entirely translucent plastic. So it does actually give you quite a different feel in terms of the transitioning colours. But then what they've done with some of those is that I mentioned before, they've obviously used an airbrush or something to just lightly spray an off-white, almost ivory colour over some of those to change the effect. And it works actually quite well. I think visually it's actually really, really well done when you consider just how simple it is, just that sort of back colour with the yellow and then that sort of highlighting with the white. The rest is just the translucent orange plastic. And it comes up with a really good effect. I think that's the best part about these pieces. All right, I mean, not much to talk about in terms of the quality of apps. I mean, there's really not a lot going on. They've slapped the yellow in the back. It's not particularly, you know, accurate, but then it doesn't need to be. The white is not overdone, as I mentioned, on those sort of highlighted areas, and it complements it quite well. Articulation, not a whole lot happening here, obviously. I did hesitate there a little bit because I wanted to talk about that in posability, playability. Don't normally cover this particular criteria a whole lot when we talk about action figures in other Toy of the Week reviews, but this one is really quite interesting. So as I said, there's definitely a flat bottom to these, so they sit quite easily. When you put them on a flat surface, they don't rock at all. They're very stable in the way that they've done. But with the back part open the way it is and completely open, I think it does limit the posability a little bit, because it means that when you set these up, you have to be careful that if you are doing some articulated, photography with your figures, you can sort of only get a certain number of poses before you turn them too far and you can see the open back piece to them, which I think is a bit disappointing. I thought that they would be sort of three-dimensional and look like a three-dimensional explosion. I think it just means you have to be careful in the way that you pose them, but it is a bit odd. Now, the flat piece on the bottom that I mentioned has a number of peg holes. There's a small peg hole and a large peg hole, and they fit the various action figure stands that are out there. So in one of the promotional images you see for these, you do actually get two explosions side by side with the third one sitting on top, almost forming a bit of a triangle shape. Now, you can only really achieve that effect if you use a figure stand to hold that other one in place. Those Bandai stands, they just poke into the bottom there, and then you can actually move that around to give that effect. That's a little bit disappointing, mainly because I think there's a real opportunity missed here that if you were going to have the back of these open the way they are, I don't know why they didn't just make it flat and then add some additional peg holes so that you can actually hang them on dioramas and things like that on the sides of, you know, buildings or something. So then you had both holes in the back and in the bottom of them. I think that would actually contribute to a lot more posability for these. And more than that, I think there's a real opportunity missed by not having magnets in them either. I think that'd be a lot of fun too. A lot of people are building dioramas now using metal to take advantage of magnets and putting magnets in the feet of action figures to get them to stick to the side of buildings and things like that. So it's, a little bit awkward, and I think there's some missed opportunity there to really make them even more versatile than they are. So, look, a lot of fun. I think Bandai are doing some great stuff with these different effects. They've now moved into the wind effects and the lightning effects, etc. And if you're willing to pay the money, I think you can get some really, really good sort of poses out of your characters. I think this one, it's almost there. As I said, the other one, I do have the other set, which are the grey explosions, and I've seen some folks do some very clever photography where they mix in both the orange and the grey together, and they use the orange to form the center explosions and the grey to form those sort of outer edges. So some really good mix and match combinations going on there. I think you have to persevere to make the most of these. I think it's not something you're just going to plonk down next to some action figures and get some really good shots up front. You'll have to play around a little bit to sort of get the best angles and get the best feel for the way they come up in those shots. So, it's something that you're either interested in or you're not. If you are interested in any kind of action figure posing, I do suggest you give these a go. I've seen some really cool images online with Deadpool leaping out of, you know, explosions, firing his guns, and good value. Yeah, a few downers here and there. I think I'm just going to round this out and give it maybe $7 out of 10. All right, thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time.
I require your warmth.
Greetings, Action Figure Blues fans. My name is Peter. I'm from Canada. I've been enjoying the podcast for as long as it's been on. I was a bit of a late joiner, but I went back and dutifully went through all of the past episodes and got myself caught up, and have been listening every Thursday. And when I heard the guys were going to be changing things up and maybe having to scale back what they were doing, I thought, hey, maybe I can review some stuff and help out. So that's what I'm going to do here today. I have one of the Grail items that I was able to pick up not last Christmas, but I believe it was the Christmas before that. I scored it on eBay, and then my wife wrapped it up and gave that to me for Christmas. So that was nice. I got exactly what I wanted. But I'm going to let you guys guess to see if you know what it is. So here's the first clue. Huh? Do you recognize it? Okay, here's another clue.
Lalilulela.
Okay, and for those who don't know what it is, that let's listen to one more.
What's wrong? Snake! Snake!
Yeah, of course it's the Metal Gear Solid action figure line. This is the line for the first game that came out for PlayStation by McFarlane Toys. There are, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 characters that were portrayed in this. And then there were 1, 2, I believe 3 variants of some of those. So the characters that we get are Solid Snake. He's the main character. We get the main bad guy. Spoilers, sorry. Old spoilers. Is Liquid Snake. We also get the Gray Fox, I believe, the ninja. And we have Sniper Wolf, Meryl Silverberg, one of my favorite characters, Revolver Ocelot. It's just a cool name. One of the best figures that I think McFarlane has ever put out, Vulcan Raven. He's mostly accessory, but we'll get to that. And Psycho Mantis. So if we look at the packaging for these guys, they're on a standard blister card, right? Big rectangular backing. Pretty black and white in terms of the deco. Now, I believe that these figures were released twice because there does seem to be a variation in how some of them are posed in the bubble. So I think I have the second release of these. And you have that nice pen and ink style image on the card. When we flip the card over on the back, you get nice thumbnail images of all the figures in the line, a nice diorama image of Snake and Meryl on a backdrop. And then the bottom half of the card is actually dedicated to other Spawn figures and the X-Files line of figures that was out at the time. So that's kind of funny. The other thing that's kind of funny about these is they are called Ultra Action figures. And if you know these figures at all, action is in line with a lot of the McFarlane figures of the day. We're not all that poseable in terms of their action ability and articulation. Now, most of my action figures I do open. I don't keep the packaging, but when I got these, I was thinking, I'll open them. Why not? And then I have them in my hands and they're thinking, I can't do it. I've been wanting these for so long and I'd seen them on the shelves. I was a little bit late coming to the Metal Gear Solid party and I had seen them on the shelves and they were a little bit more expensive than I had wanted to pay at the time, not really knowing the game. And by the time I played the game and fell in love with all the characters, they were all gone, except ironically for the variant figures, which I don't have. The variants are, they're stealth mode, so they're cast in a clear plastic. The Snake one was done in a clear blue, as was the ninja figure. And then Psycho Mantis was done in a cool sort of grungy green color. So those are the only ones that I remember seeing on the pegs when I was interested in buying them. And silly me at the time, I thought, well, those aren't the normal standard deco, so I don't want those. And now they go for a pretty penny on eBay. So I might hunt those down. I'm not sure, but I was lucky enough to find this wave, on eBay for what turns out to be quite a steal. The person, I believe, spelt something wrong in the title, if I'm remembering correctly. And then also the first character that they placed in, because I bought the whole wave at once, was Vulcan Raven. So it wasn't the main character Snake. So I think I stole one off of eBay, used up all my eBay mojo at one go. So I actually got these figures for, I think it was $9 each, which was absolutely fantastic. So let's take a look at these figures. So the first one we're going to look at, of course, is the main character, and his name is Solid Snake. He comes in his characteristic sneaking suit, is what they call it. It's pretty much a police tactical type military outfit. It looks like a bulletproof vest kind of deal with some nice shoulder pads. He's wearing elbow pads, knee pads. He's got a holster, which holds one of the weapons that he comes with. He has his trademark bandana with the tails of it blowing in the breeze. He has a nice belt with some tactical looking pouches, probably for the never ending supply of bullets that video game characters seem to have. With all of these figures, the deco on them is just fantastic. As we all know, with those early McFarlane figures, they were heavy on the nice washes, and different paint colors that they were using. Every little buckle, every little rivet, that sort of thing is picked out, which is great. He even has treads on the bottom of his boots. Where these figures really shine is their accessories. So Snake comes with his SOCOM pistol, as well as the laser sight and silencer. And what's really cool about these figures is those are actually separate pieces. So you can have his handgun and then put the laser sight and silencer on as a separate piece. He has night vision goggles, as well as a gas mask that he can snap onto his face. He has the assault rifle that was popular in the game. I believe it's a FAMAS rifle, FAMAS. I'm not sure how to pronounce that, but that's there you go. He comes with the C4 and detonator. It's a tiny little block that he can't even really hold in his hand, but it has a red wire, a green wire, a yellow wire, a daub of silver, and a timer with a nice copper brassy color on it, as well as some silver highlights. So the paint on these, even on that tiny little accessory piece, is amazing. He also has a rocket launcher that he comes with to fire a Stinger missile. You use that in the video game. It's featured in a battle that Snake has against a helicopter, which is a really fun boss battle. But with this particular accessory, it's kind of funny. It has a missile and a spring-loaded launch feature. But you actually load the missile into the back, and then it fires the wrong way out of the missile launcher. It fires out of the long end, which, as you know, if you're familiar with rocket launchers at all, is the end that would actually go over Snake's shoulder. So it launches backwards, which is kind of funny. I think that's mostly a case of there not being enough space in the other end to have the firing mechanism and spring and everything like that. But you could pose him with it without the missile firing action, as it were. So Snake's able to hold on to the rifle if you'd like. Again, I haven't taken mine out of the package, but from the reviews that I have seen, his guns don't fit in his hands particularly well. They're not the standard Hasbro Marvel Legends grip and slip the gun in. There's actually a pin that sticks out of the handgun and the rifle and a little hole in his hand, and apparently they don't fit in there too well. But as seeing as I'm keeping mine in package, that's not a big problem for me. One thing with Snake, with this figure in particular, is if you're familiar with this line at all, is it's really unfortunate how awful his face looks. There's no getting around it. It just looks weird. At this point, within the video game, we didn't really know what Snake looked like. He was always heavily shadowed or seen from above. And with those stunning PlayStation 1 graphics, the McFarlane sculptors were really left with not much to work with. So they took a stab at it, and it didn't end well. And as the games progressed and we came to know what Snake actually looks like in the video games, this one is left as a glaring example of just sort of sculpting gone wrong, which is unfortunate, considering how great the rest of the figure is. In terms of its deco, that we're left with this ugly mug on Snake. So let's look at Snake's articulation. Again, these are early McFarlanes, so they don't articulate particularly well. He's got a cut joint at his neck so he can look left and right. He's got ball-jointed shoulders. I believe he has a bicep cut on one arm, potentially. And then he's got this weird diagonal slice across his right elbow. So he can kind of bend his arm up like he would be holding one of his weapons. He has single jointed knees that could go about 90 degrees. And I believe he has a boot cut, but no ankle rotation at all. And of course, no ankle pivot because we hadn't figured out that technology yet. So now if we move on to the next figure, we'll go to the main bad guy from the game. If you haven't played the game yet, plug your ears for a second. This is Liquid Snake. He is wonderfully bare-chested, I guess. He has a nice trench coat on, as well as some commando pants and boots, and a belt. Again, wonderfully decoed. Everything has a nice wash over it. He's got nice leather gloves. And what's kind of cool with him is he actually has metal dog tags on a little chain that he wears, which is kind of nice. Again, he comes with that same SOCOM pistol with removable laser sight and silencer. He has the same night vision goggles that Snake does and the same assault rifle as well. In terms of Liquid Snake's articulation, he comes with that single slice at his neck so he can look left and right. He's got ball-jointed shoulders. He has one slice above one of his elbows so he can pivot his arm a bit that way. He's got slices at his hips so he can sit. He has single-jointed knees, and that is it. And again, with the coat that he's wearing a long trench coat, so that would really hinder a lot of his articulation from the waist down anyway. He might have a waist swivel, I'm not too sure. The paint on these, again, is fantastic. Pretty clean, hardly any slop here at all. So I guess Gertie hadn't been hired at this point in history. So the next figure we'll look at is the Ninja or Gray Fox. Again, sorry, spoilers, but if you haven't played the game at this point, sorry, you should still play it. It's a fantastic game. But the Ninja has, I guess you'd say, the most conventional articulation as we know it now. He has slices at his shoulders so he can lift his arms up and down. He's got bicep swivels on both arms. He has wrist swivels. He has what looks like a waist cut, but it's actually a little bit higher. So it's a straight cut across where a diaphragm joint sort of would be now. He has diagonal slices at his hips so he could kind of sit down. He'd look like a little kid sitting with his legs sort of splayed out. He has straight cuts just above his knees, and he has single jointed knees as well as single jointed ankle articulation and no ankle pivot at this point either. He's wearing his ninja robotic ninja suit with his brown and that nice smoky blue color, which is kind of cool. He's got very armored looking. He actually comes with a swap-out head. This is one of the first figures that I remember having a swap-out head, one with the mask open and one with the mask closed. He comes with a swap-out arm as well, which is kind of cool. Looks like you just peg out the lower section below the bicep swivel. And then he's got this cool robotic machine gun arm attachment, which again has a beautiful gunmetal wash over it. And he comes with his ninja blade as well that has the cord that plugs into his back. He was a very anime-looking character and really, really cool in the game. He actually could turn invisible, which is why I really want the stealth variant that came with that was released with him. But again, that was one of the ones that I unknowingly left on the pegs and will forever long for until I break down and buy it on eBay for too much. Don't tell my wife. So the next figure is one of my favorites from the wave, is Revolver Ocelot. He, again, has a fantastic paint job. And, again, has limited articulation, shall we say. He has a waist cut, as well as joints at his shoulders and elbows. Again, those are cut joints, not ball joints, so we're limited in the way we can move him around. He has wrist articulation, I believe, and he has no articulation from the waist down, so he's essentially a statue from the waist down. But paint job wise, he is fantastic. He's wearing his nice Old West style vest with bandoliers and his Old West style holster. He's got a leather duster on, a big trench coat. I believe he's wearing a cravat, and you even have the little tie pin is painted gold, which is great. He's got a mustache and long gray hair. He actually kind of reminds me of Sam Elliott, if you're familiar with Sam Elliott. But again, nothing is solid gray. There are two tones of gray in his hair and his mustache, which are great. The bullets actually have 1, 2, 3 colors. They have silver tips, brass backs, and then you have the little leather painted over for the little spots that they slide into. Revolver Ocelot comes with his 2 old-style Western sort of Smith & Wesson revolvers, which he uses in the game. One thing for the people who have opened this that I've seen is the trigger guards tend to break on those. So if you do have Revolver Ocelot and you've opened them up, please be careful with those trigger guards, because when you slide his trigger finger in, he has one sort of gun holding hand that tended to break the trigger guards on his guns. But again, I'm keeping mine in package, so I will have them both and they will both remain intact, which is great. If we move on to the lovely ladies that came in the wave, we've got Meryl Silverberg. She was the heroine of the story. Again, her paint deco is fantastic. She's wearing green, rather tight military pants. She's got knee pads, a thigh holster, a belt, and she's got gloves on and elbow pad sort of things, arm wraps, and a black tank top on. Her hair is red with a nice darker red wash in there. Again, all very well applied. She comes with her rifle and a pistol, as well as a knife, and she has a grappling hook as well. With her, she also has painted fingernails. Her nails are individually painted white, which is really cool. And all the silver deco on her belt and all of her accessories is immaculately well done. So again, Gertie never touched these ones. The next that we will look at is Sniper Wolf, and then we'll talk about the ladies and their articulation or lack thereof together, because they're fairly similar. Sniper Wolf comes in the character as she is seen in the game, with her military outfit, tight pants, green, and a military jacket, which is unzipped to just above her navel. And of course she has no shirt on under that. And if you've played the game, her level is very, very snowy and cold, so she must have been freezing. She's got elbow pads and pretty nice hair, actually, in terms of how it's sculpted. I don't think you'd be able to move her head around much because of that. So the fact that she has neck articulation doesn't mean much. She comes with her big sniper rifle, and she actually comes with a wolf as well. There's nothing really special to write home about the wolf. He is just like one of those plastic solid characters that you would get at like a craft store or something like that for a little kid. And she actually has her fingernails painted white as well. And she has a nice foxhound logo that's very nicely deckled onto her military outfit, which is cool. So in terms of articulation for these ladies, there's nothing from the waist down. They are essentially statues. They do have a waist cut, I believe, so you could swivel them around. They both have cuts at their shoulders and bicep swivels. But really, with both of these ladies, they're only going to look good posed in one way. So the fact that they do have articulation doesn't really mean much, because you're going to pose them around in the way that they were essentially designed to be standing. So they are pretty well statues. The last character is Psycho Mantis. He's one of my favorite characters to play against in the game. He has a boss level. He's a really creepy looking guy. He's sort of a zombie skull-like face with lots of staples and suture lines and that sort of thing holding him all together. He has white eyes, really creepy looking, actually. So Scott wouldn't like this guy at all. Sort of very goth BDSM Hellraiser type attire with big long rubbery gloves up to the armpits. Very skeletal looking figure with straps and rings and buckles everywhere. But very nicely painted. He also comes with the gas mask that he wears in the game. And the accessories that Psycho Mantis comes with are looks like a Caesar type, Julius Caesar type bust on a plinth, as well as an urn. And it's an orb type psychic power energy blast thing that he fires in the game as well. This is one of the coolest characters in the game because they break the fourth wall with Psycho Mantis. And he actually reads your mind and tells you about yourself. So the game would actually look at your memory card. And if you were somebody who liked to save a lot, he would say that you're a very cautious player, that sort of thing. Or if you'd played some of the other Konami games or Hideo Kojima developed games, he would be able to recognize those and name them for you, which was kind of cool. And the other awesome thing that you'd do is you'd put your controller on the ground and he'd move it with the power of his mind by turning on the rumble packs and it would kind of skitter across the floor, which was really cool. And last but certainly not least is what I said to be the one of the greatest figures that I think McFarlane has ever produced, which is Vulcan Raven, so named after the Vulcan cannon that he comes with, which is very similar to the big machine gun that Jesse Ventura carries around in the Predator movies. So Vulcan Raven is, again, he's a really big guy. He's much bigger and heavier than the other figures in the line. He's got wonderful tattoos all over him. He's got a big raven tattooed on his forehead. He's got nice teeth decoed. He kind of looks like Vin Diesel, actually, a little bit. You can see the big veins in his huge muscles. He's topless with military pants, big pockets, nice heavy boots on. But as I mentioned, the big thing that comes with him is the accessory of that cannon and the huge drum of bullets that he comes with as well that slings across his shoulders. And he's very much built to just hold that and be in that one pose. But even so, he is an amazing, amazing figure. He's the one that I want to open the most, but I still don't because then I'd open the other ones and I don't want to do that just because, I'm not sure that I would be as jazzed with them if they were open because the articulation is so not up to today's standards that I think they're better left in their packages to be appreciated as I had seen them and longed after them in the stores. And that way I know where all the accessories are as well because they're all packaged in there with them. So again, this was one of the great video games of my youth, shall we say. It was one of the first ones that I really got into. And it was a historical video game series. There are older versions that are for the Nintendo, I believe, or Super Nintendo. And they were really the first in that stealth sneaking, style of video game, which was so groundbreaking, that Hideo Kojima is known for. So, if you were a fan of that game, I couldn't recommend more that you pick up these figures because they are really, really, really beautifully done. If you're okay with the older style of articulation or lack thereof, that would be the only drawback for these ones. So for this line on the whole, I would have to give it, let's say $6 out of 10, just for the lack of articulation, is really where they suffer and the fact that some of their accessories won't fit in their hands and they would be really easy to lose, that sort of thing. But other than that, they are absolutely spectacular. Maybe I'd move it up to a 6.5, potentially a 7. Here I am moving them up. If I just look at Vulcan Raven, he's a total 10. But with just the line overall, I'd say 6, 6.5. Thanks so much.
Avada Kedavra.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you so much for putting that out there for us to hear. And wonderful production values there, guys. That's does take a little bit of work, but you definitely did a wonderful job creating ambience there. And a wonderful toy piece to talk about. It's actually something I've considered doing, so it's even easier if someone else does it for you. It's great. I am a big fan of the McFarlane Metal Gear Solid line. I mean, there have been episodes where I've waxed on laxotically about McFarlane toys, and one of my favorite lines is that Metal Gear Solid line. I actually probably picked it up around the same time as you there, Peter, a couple of Christmases ago. I brought it as a gift from me to me, and was very happy with it. I missed it at its initial release and always sort of, you know, people talk about they're going through the catalogs at Christmas and they'll sit there and that. There used to be a McFarlane catalog that had images of it, and I remember always being very impressed, but the only one I could sort of find around the time I started to get into Metal Gear Solid, which was late 2001, early 2002 with the release of Sons of Liberty, the second Metal Gear Solid game, I was sort of too late to track down most of those main ones, even though it was that first game that I was really playing there on computer, and that was the game that I really loved. But I do remember that one of the first times I ever saw a major markup on a new figure was the Solid Snake from that second Metal Gear Solid line. They had it in Electronic Boutiques for around sort of, it was almost $100. I think they had it around 80, but in my mind, I just have it as 100. But to be honest, I think it was 80. And it was just a brand new figure, but because it was packed far less per case, people were charging a lot of money for it. Even though it kind of looked like David Wenham to me more than Solid Snake from the video game. But I did very much want it, but unfortunately was not going to be able to procure it at $80. I'd only just started working my sort of high school job stacking shelves in the supermarket at a time. And $80 on one figure, then I was still accountable for my money. I would have had to explain where that money went that I was trying to save for a holiday the next year on. So I was a bit disappointed there, but then went across the shopping center aisle and in a toy store, they just unpacked a case and there was one sitting on the shelf for $15 and I was wrapped. It was one of the first times I felt like a true Indiana Jones style toy hunter getting around, procuring something at a great bargain despite seeming at this figure going for high costs at the time. So I definitely strongly connect that Metal Gear Solid line with toy hunting, not only because that original ones were a grail for me for a couple of years, but also that other one there with Solid Snake. And it is an interesting line. I think it's a great line that someone could do amazing things with today, but no one's really been able to lock it down. And I think you really do need to go back to that classic game there and hit on some of that main Solid Snake rather than the big boss. But I'm talking Greek to the people who don't play the Metal Gear Solid games now. But for those of you out there wondering how Peter got on the show and how he was able to contribute, it was very simple. He just recorded something and sent it in. It is that simple, guys. I've been seeing a lot of comments in that around, not just to do with sort of toy collecting or podcasting, but just comments from people out there in the world on social media and that. I saw one guy do a post today that was sort of saying like, oh, I've got these really great ideas for movies, but you know, it just seems like a way of like, I'm not able to get to film school and all this. And it's just, you just got to create, guys. Like, I'm sure most people out there listening to this have a story that they want to tell, an idea, or a piece of art. And you know what? Maybe people, unfortunately, the reality is a lot of people might not be able to find it, read it, or see it. But they're never going to either way if you don't create it or put something out. So if you ever have the inkling to create something, get out there and create it. It might not be the next blockbuster, but just create and put things out in the world. Once they're out in the world, they've got a life of their own. But if you've got the inkling to create, get out there and create. And particularly if you might have an inkling to create a review of an action figure, we are definitely receptive. So if there's anything you're dying to talk about or review, then just record something, send it through to us. Most of you have iPhones or Android phones. They have recording apps on it. Send stuff through, and there's a very good chance you will hear it played back here on the show. And I particularly want to call out, if you have something that you think that we don't review enough, say Transformers, wrestling figures, My Little Pony, that adult fantasy line that came out a couple of years ago, anything like that, well, we pay for things out of our own pocket. So when we're reviewing things, chances are they're going to be something we had an interest in buying in anyway. It's probably why we generally talk about certain things like Marvel and Star Wars a lot on this show. They appeal to us, and you can generally get an idea of when we're going through sort of certain flights of fancy, because we'll be talking about that. So if there's something that we don't cover on the show, then that's a perfect window for you to get in and cover that. Because to be honest, if you're thinking we don't review enough wrestling figures on this show, there's probably 100 other people thinking that same thing. And I think it sometimes, but I honestly don't know much about wrestling. I actually used to live with a feminist blogger who was a big wrestling fan, and she used to get quite annoyed when people would come over and see wrestling gear and just assume, as the geek of the household, that it was my stuff and start talking to me about wrestling. And I have no idea what the difference between a Stone Cold and a 3H is. That's just me. But if you do, then maybe that's something you want to think about. So if you have been inkling on anything like that at all, be like Peter. Create. Get out there, guys. It's a fantastic thing to do. So definitely think about it. And if you do, send it through to us at podcast@actionfigureblues.com. So thank you for joining us again for another episode, guys. I hope you like the little treats that I've put in throughout this episode, inspired by Peter having a little bit of a mystery. I thought I'd chuck some together. It's fairly easy to work out, but the mystery question is, can you work out what audiobooks I've been listening to at the gym this week? So be shocked if most people don't get this one, but it was there in the back of my mind. I just needed to find an excuse to use it. So thank you for indulging me there, and be safe, guys, and have a good journey.
The Action Figure Blues podcast can be found on iTunes and Stitcher Radio, and can be downloaded direct from actionfigureblues.com. Wherever you listen, please take a moment to leave a positive rating and review to help others find our show. We also have an active fan forum at afbforum.com, where you can join with all the hosts of the podcast and many other collectors to discuss news, reviews, old lines, and trade and sell in a safe community. Please join us there. While you're at actionfigureblues.com, don't forget to check out our sponsors like Mike's Comics and Stuff, The Pop Culture Superstore, Bam Kapow, and Davy Boy's Toys. You can find us on Twitter at AFBlues, on Instagram at actionfigureblues, and on Facebook at facebook.com/actionfigureblues. Thanks for listening.
Mischief managed.